This is the Brexit Podcast, and I'm your host, Jennifer Han. In the wake of the EU referendum, you might have heard about the fact that Cornwall, despite receiving large amounts of funding from the EU, overwhelmingly voted to leave. For today's episode, Tim and I chatted to veteran Cornishman and founder of independent local news website Cornwall Reports to get some details on what might have motivated this decision. We also touch on the county's major industries, including agriculture, tourism, and fishing, to gauge how the lack of subsidies might or might not affect them, as well as local residents. Perhaps most pressingly, we also debate who will pick the daffodil fields should the flow of EU migrant workers to the UK stop, so stay tuned to hear the answer to this incredibly pressing question. If you enjoy the show, you can subscribe to us wherever you're listening to this podcast, and while you're there, do give us a quick write and review to spread the love. You can also find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast.
It's a warm welcome to our next guest, who's Graham Smith from Cornwall. And we wanted to get a view from the regions for quite some time, and no better person to turn to. Graham's been living in Cornwall for 36 years, and he's a well-respected journalist from the area. So welcome to the show, Graham.
Thank you very much.
So, Graham, let's pile in. First question. Look, Cornwall received millions in European aid, European Union aid, and yet voted overwhelmingly for Brexit. Why was that?
There are several reasons, I think. You'd be hard-pressed to really pin it on a single factor. I suppose, at the risk of stating the obvious, the answer is that most of the people who voted don't feel as if they benefited from those millions of pounds of European aid. For example, Cornwall is a very popular area for retirement. So a large sector of the population here is, I suppose you could say, outside of the waged economy. And so although the European money has been successful in creating jobs, many of those people who voted don't feel like that benefited them. The other reason is that those people who did benefit from European aid, like, for example, the farming community, even in Cornwall, they are a small percentage of the population. I live in North Cornwall on the edge of Bodmin Moor, one of the most rural parts even of Cornwall. And even here, only 7% of the economy stems from agriculture. So while you might think that we were all turkeys voting for Christmas down here in Cornwall, in fact, it wasn't like that, really. The European aid has created jobs. It has improved the infrastructure in Cornwall. But many of the people who live here just don't feel that that benefited them.
Do you know, in terms of figures, do you know how much net benefit came into the county?
Well, it depends when you start counting. I've seen one figure that said that between the year 2000 and projected to 2020, Cornwall was going to benefit by £2.5 billion. I have to say, I think that's a made-up number because it assumes also levering in the private sector investment and some central UK government money and local authority money that all comes in to match European funds. Cornwall has been benefiting from Europe for a very long time because we used to be tied in with Devon and benefited from something called the European Regional Development Fund. And then in 1999, Cornwall divorced from Devon and became a standalone area within the European Union for funds. And this was a smart move because by separating from relatively rich Devon, Cornwall became much poorer, and we were able to demonstrate that we were even more poor than Poland. What a thing to put on your CV. And so from 1999, Cornwall qualified for what was called Objective 1 status within Europe, and the money then really rose exponentially, and we got cash for a university, we got money to develop Newquay Airport, roads were dualled. You can't drive 10 miles in Cornwall without seeing a new industrial estate with the European Union flag flying somewhere. So it does really depend on when you start counting and whether you're also going to count the private sector and UK government money that also goes into projects. But what is agreed is that from, say, June last year until Brexit actually happens, Cornwall still had £438 million still to go. And that's money that we thought we were going to be able to spend, but if you were a Brussels bureaucrat, would you be falling over yourself to write a cheque in a hurry right now? I doubt it.
Very true, very true. Jen?
In the beginning, you mentioned that most of the money went to farming and most Cornish people aren't farmers.
Yeah.
So you didn't think that they felt the impact very much. But just now you mentioned that it also went a lot to roads and airports and things like that. Do you not think that, is it that people didn't realize that that money came from the EU, so they didn't see any tangible difference, or what do you think?
I think that we can't underestimate the importance of the demographics that show just how many elderly people we have living in Cornwall. I mean, one person has, I won't say who he is, let me say a senior cleric has described Cornwall as one big geriatric ward. And now 56% of voters in Cornwall voted to leave the European Union. Of them, I suspect that the elderly people were those who turned out to vote. We know from pretty much all elections that, not to be too crude about it, but old people vote and young people don't. And that was reflected in the pattern, when you break it down by parliamentary constituency, of how Cornwall voted. There are six parliamentary constituencies in Cornwall. They're all held by Conservatives at the moment. But one of those Conservative MPs was in favour of Remain, while the other five were for leaving. The one constituency MP who wanted to remain was clearly supported by the voters in that area. And that's because that area, the Truro and Falmouth constituency, includes the university town of Falmouth. So you've got probably more young people living in Falmouth, either working at the university or studying there, than, for example, where I live, where it's very popular. The coastal strips are, that's if anybody lives there at all, if they're not just second homes, many retired folk. And those retired folk, I don't think they care very much, to be honest, if there is an industrial estate just down the road from them. They would probably prefer it if it wasn't there. I don't think they're that fussed that Newquay Airport is now bigger and better than it used to be. Again, they would probably prefer it if it wasn't there.
And in terms of the local politicians, Graham, with, did you say five of the six voted to leave?
Yeah.
Five of the six position was to leave. What's their view? Are they just saying that they're, you know, they're mandated by the electorate? Is the will of the people?
No, I think they genuinely were for Brexit and had been, you know, within Conservative Party politics for many years. And the view was that, yes, we get lots of money from Europe, but, I mean, you'd have heard this argument before. We get lots of money from Europe, but only what we put into Europe. And so what we're saying is we're going to spend that money ourselves and make that decision for ourselves. Now, the risk associated with that, and we will have to wait to see whether this actually happens, but in spring last year, the National Audit Office produced a report showing that Cornwall was near the bottom of a UK government league table for receiving UK government funds. Now, that is a crude political measure of how Whitehall sees life outside of the M25, and Cornwall, frankly, wasn't that important. And so the idea that Cornwall is going to be rescued somehow by Whitehall now spending money in Cornwall in a way that it never used to, I'm not sure. I'm not holding my breath for that to happen.
So what do you think to these retired people that predominantly live in Cornwall? What kind of funding would have made a difference for them? What kind of funding would have made them maybe believe in the EU?
To be honest, I don't think it's down to money. I think sentiment is a lot to do with it. We're talking about a generation that perhaps still has some memory of the Second World War, and
yes,
and take the view that Britain was stronger when we were on our own. They might even still think we have an empire. And they're probably people who are relatively wealthy. I say relatively because Cornwall is, by any stretch of the imagination, a poor county. But the trend is for people to strip out the equity of their home in, shall we say, London or the home counties, and they can afford to buy somewhere quite nice and live a fairly comfortable retired life, as long as they're not actually from Cornwall originally. So they can move to Cornwall, and they're almost immune from the day-to-day economic concerns that motivate the rest of us.
Yeah, you sort of touched on emotional voting patterns, which I guess that's run very true.
Yes, I mean, let me give you an example. During the whole of the Brexit campaign, I went to the small fishing town of Padstow on the North Cornwall coast to really research and write a colour piece about sentiment there. And I think it probably is true to say that the fishing industry all around the UK did not do particularly well out of Britain's membership of, well, the common market as it was then, because we just weren't able to compete with the bigger, more industrial approach to fishing that that some of the other European Union states adopted. Now, in Padstow, I spent a day in Padstow just talking to people, and I could not find one single person who was for Remain. And the tourism industry people in Padstow, and they're the majority now, but they were looking forward to Britain being outside of the European Union because they thought that that would stimulate the tourism trade in Cornwall, and perhaps to some extent they're correct there. And the fishing industry just thought, we don't like the idea of these foreigners coming up to our shores and taking our fish. And now, I think the fishing industry might be about to do a reappraisal of its position on Europe because, well, they hadn't thought about, or at least they didn't like to articulate it, is that 80% of the fish landed in the UK are exported to the European Union. I said they hadn't thought about it. There is a difference between the people who buy and sell the fish and the people who actually go out to sea and catch them. So I suppose if you're out on a small boat...
Are they not all sold in Rick Stein Seafood Restaurant?
Yeah, then? Well, a lot of them are, yeah. but even the customers at Rick Stein's or Nathan Outlaw's just up the coast can't eat all of those fish. So they eat 20% and they'll probably come back for second helpings. But we need access to those European markets to be able to sell the fish that we land in Cornwall. And with the Brexit negotiations about to start, I mean, that's going to be a nightmare, frankly. The local authorities down here in Cornwall are trying to prepare themselves to make their voices heard on how the negotiations go. But it's going to be like a great big 2-year-long European Union summit, isn't it, where the fishing industry in Cornwall, to some extent, gets traded for the car industry in Sunderland, or vice versa.
How big's the fishing industry, Graham?
Well, you might think it's big because you see lots of pictures, but it actually employs fewer than 1% of people, even in big places like Newlyn and so on. You know, so it's Well, again, I suppose it depends how far out you extrapolate that. If you were going to include,
the
people who work for Rick Stein in the kitchens skinning the fish, for example, you know, but just actually going out on boats and catching fish, a tiny percentage of those who are economically active. There's a lot of sentiment attached to that. And as I say, the fishing industry did suffer, really, as a result of joining the common market in the 1970s, because we found we were not able to compete. And so the common fisheries policy exposed us to those vulnerabilities. But nevertheless, we don't eat enough fish. We've got to be able to sell them to Europe. And that's going to be a very important part of the Brexit negotiations for us.
Yeah. So a second ago, you touched on sort of how you perceive the future of money coming into Cornwall now that we are leaving the EU. In what I would call a pretty well-publicized move, the day after the referendum, the Cornwall County Council called on a confirmation of the fact that there would be as much funding coming into Cornwall from the UK government as there was in the EU. Mm-hmm. I believe that was promised by the Leave campaign at the time, but there was never any sort of commitment made to this by the government. As it's now over a half year on, has there been any kind of guarantee in regards to this money whatsoever?
No. Very simple answer. No guarantees at all. And that's one of the reasons that the local authorities here are so worried. As I say, £438 million still to be spent in Cornwall because the European Union deal that we have, and there are projects which are in the pipeline. The local authorities are still inviting people to come up with projects to bid for that cash. But as I say, if you're a Brussels bureaucrat, you're not going to be scrabbling for your checkbook now to write out funds for Cornwall, are you? I mean, so where is that money going to come from? And of course, people like Boris Johnson, who are making those promises, aren't actually in a position to deliver on them anyway. So, well, we don't know, do we? And we're going to have to wait to see what Theresa May says in the coming months over where that money is going to come from. But as I indicated, that National Audit Office report isn't terribly encouraging if you think that Cornwall is going to be at the top of the government's list of priorities.
No, so it's not at the top of the list of priorities. The funding's about to run dry. We've got an ageing and slightly disaffected population. A few challenges there.
Yep.
If you're the man to solve them, Graham. Or are they such challenges? If I ask somebody who's retired down there, they'd say, well, actually, no, I've got quite a nice life. But then you said, immune. So
No. You're absolutely right. I mean, you know, I dare say that those people who were in the majority in June last year, they are the winners. But you can't have winners without having losers. And the European money has contributed to some economic growth. I mean, for example, I run a business, a local news website. I could not run that business if I didn't have super fast broadband. And because of where I live, there was no way on earth that a company like BT, without some inducements, was ever going to connect up super fast broadband to my place. Well, the European Union came along with £132 million to improve broadband connectivity in Cornwall, with the result that Cornwall actually has much better broadband than some parts of London. And that allows all kinds of working from home or smart connections that you wouldn't get somewhere else. But, you know, there's another aspect to all this, which, again, is almost sentimental as much as it is really economic. Things like Cornish pasties enjoy what the European Union describes as PGI, Protected Geographical Indication status. It means that you can't make a Cornish pasty unless you're in Cornwall. And the European Union has an army of bureaucrats to make sure that that protection is in place. Well, outside of the European Union, any Tom, Dick or Harry or anywhere in the world will be able to make pasties and flood them into Cornwall. It's going to be awful.
And I'm sure there's probably some other Cornish produce that's similar to the pasties, isn't there?
Yep, clotted cream. Yep, Rodder's clotted cream. I mean, there is actually something called the Cornish Pasty Association that did come out and declare for Remain on the grounds that this was a potential problem. I think we are going to see an impact. Well, to some extent, we've seen impacts already. As I say, the tourism industry in Padstow was looking forward to a Brexit vote because they thought that would encourage people to have more holidays at home. And I think we have seen already that that was true, although perhaps not for the reasons that they thought. It's because the pounds declined in value. And so overseas holidays are now more expensive.
Yep.
Or visitors from overseas to the UK are now getting a better deal.
Have you had an influx of those from the continent?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say so. And again, there was a recent survey of the local tourism industry, and well, I think nationally the figure was £1.4 billion Brexit boost to the tourism industry. The domestic industry, because of people either staycationing, as they call it, you know, just because they couldn't afford to go anywhere, but because also people from outside of the UK now get much more for their money when they come here. So the tourism industry is sort of rubbing its hands a bit. But the other area where I think we're going to see an impact quite soon in our agriculture sector, very soon, Cornwall will be lit up by the daffodil fields. It's a big part of our agricultural sector, growing daffodils. They bloom here earlier than they do in the rest of the UK. But in order to get those daffodils picked, we need an army of migrant labourers who traditionally have come from countries like Bulgaria. And they come here because we have a national minimum wage and that is actually even more than they manage to get paid at home. And they come over for very short periods, and the farmers could not get their daffodils out of the ground without them. Now, are they going to come this year? We don't know. And there are many very worried farmers. That just the change in sentiment and the sort of increase in anti-foreigner mood might discourage them from coming, because they could go and work as migrants somewhere else, such as in Germany.
And will there be anyone to take the daffodils?
Well, that's what we, who knows? There might not be. And if it's not the migrant workers, I don't think we're going to see very many native Cornish agricultural workers keen to do it for the same minimum wage. That they might rather just go and sell ice cream on the beach or something less backbreaking.
With Cornwall having such a sort of unique set of issues and challenges, do you think there should be more devolvement of power to the local area?
Well, only if it comes with the money to... I mean, it sounds nice, doesn't it? Devolution. And
yeah.
Cornwall does have a devolution deal with central government. But there are constant arguments over how is that going to be funded. And it's all very well saying to Cornwall Council, you are now responsible for your own roads, or even you are now responsible for solving your own housing problems. But how are you going to do that? I mean, they couldn't do it just through council tax alone. So it's all politics, isn't it? The devil really is in the detail. And the Brexit Select Committee, Hilary Benn's committee, is coming down to Cornwall in a few weeks as part of its sort of evidence collection before producing a report. And that will really put sectors such as the fishing industry into context alongside Nissan's car plant. See, I don't think people realise that when we see on the news that the government has given a guarantee to Nissan, is that actually bad news for Cornwall? Well, I would say potentially it is, because we've had no guarantees at all. No, Theresa May has not come down to Cornwall and said, don't worry, I'm going to look after you and make sure that you can sell your fish to Europe, or that no horrible pasties from Poland are going to wash up in Truro. And as I say, are we as much of a priority as we would like to think? I don't see the evidence for that.
So need to be a rallying call to get out and lobby Hilary Benn when he comes back.
Well, I'm not sure is he really in a position to do anything. He can produce a report, can't he? But come back to the fact: 56% voted to leave. And I think that if we were to rerun the referendum tomorrow, it wouldn't be that different, to be honest. Cornwall is a funny sort of place, and to some extent immune from the real economic world. And for those people, that's good. But for many people in Cornwall, as I say, we are still officially one of the poorest parts of Europe, with a gross domestic product per head that would qualify us under normal circumstances for that kind of aid.
Yeah, now you clearly know your stuff when you're talking about Cornwall. Now, you did more than 20 years on TV, and you're a political editor and head of current affairs at ITV West Country. Now you've launched Cornwall Reports, which is an independent news website.
Yep, that's right.
Quality,
yep,
broken away to do some quality news journalism.
Well, that's the hope. Yeah, do some quality journalism. It's a slightly different model to what people might be used to, because I think we've got used to the idea that you get news for nothing. Well, my website's so good, I'm charging people to read it. So the idea behind my website is that journalism has value, and that it is genuinely interesting and in the public interest, and that's not necessarily the same as just what the public finds interesting. And so if you want to know what's going on, then cornwallreports.co.uk, that's the place to go. I'll tell you it as it is.
Thank you. Do you think the Brexit, everything that's happened in the aftermath of the EU referendum, has awakened people that they need to take more interest in current affairs and news?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, whether they're for Brexit or for Remain.
Yes.
Everybody was talking about it, and still is, but they're now talking about it for other reasons, like, oh gosh, you know, we hadn't thought of that, so where are we going to sell our fish, or how are we going to pick our daffodils? So those kinds of issues are still very much being talked about, and to some extent, I think you could say that those people who are not retired, but who are still very much for Brexit, are looking at ways of having their cake and eating it, and I suspect, as I say, that the fishing industry is going to be one of the first where we might see really significant changes in sentiment. There's no doubt that the fishing industry overwhelmingly was for Brexit. But I think as the penny starts to drop, that they're going to be even worse off outside of the European Union. But I just don't see how even the might of the Royal Navy is going to stop fish from swimming from the, you know, our side of the channel to the other side of the channel, and it's just one of those industries that does not lend itself naturally to nationalistic rules and regulations.
No, it lends itself to a good cartoonist, I can picture. So just finally, Graham, thank you ever so much. It's been a fascinating insight into Cornwall for the past sort of 20 minutes or so, but Just finally, tourism's obviously a big industry. If you have some Brits listening to this, or actually anyone from any part of the world, I shouldn't say just Brits, anyone from any part of the world listening to this, a couple of picks of places to go down in your lovely county, where would they be?
Oh, well, there are so many. I'm incredibly lucky. I live only a few miles from some of the best surfing beaches in the world. You would think that by now I would have learned to surf, wouldn't you? Anywhere on the North Cornwall coast, pretty much. So personally, I prefer the smaller coastal areas, places like Port Isaac, which is famous in Doc Martin. I don't know if I'm allowed to plug Doc Martin, but that's filmed there. Poldark, of course, is filmed all over Cornwall. And while Cornwall has changed a bit from Poldark's day, there are bits of it that haven't. And
thriving TV and film industry down there.
Yeah, no. Well, it's not surprising. It still has significant natural beauty that you struggle to find anywhere else in the world. And some people would say that the European Union was doing its best to destroy that natural beauty by building industrial estates and bringing all these jobs here. But, well, like I say, cake, eat it, can't.
Fantastic. Graham, on that note, we're going to say cheerio. Thanks ever so much, dear friend.
As always, thanks for listening, and if you enjoy the show, please subscribe to us on your podcast platform of choice so you'll be notified whenever we upload a new episode, and you'll be able to tune in. In the meantime, you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at brexitpodcast. The show is produced by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming, and Warren Paul, and our theme song is Cool Vibes by Kevin MacLeod.